The Tram by Marco Lindrus. A window seat opens up at the very next stop, but to my chagrin, a plump woman in a thick winter coat beats me to it. My ideal spot, in the second row of the rear platform on the left, free from any obstructing window frames. To claim it, I am ready to sacrifice my manners. I stand prepared to lunge for my seat, completely indifferent to any elderly grandmothers, pregnant women, or otherwise infirm fellow human beings. That seat ought to have a reserved sign for the insane and the neurotic, just as the seats by the door do for the frail. There have been times when it was occupied for the entire journey, ruining my day. Irritated, I continue my vigil. Finally, the seat empties. I let the previous occupant slip past me while simultaneously blocking the way for the others, ensuring no one from the crowd can wriggle past to steal my spot. Little brats are brazen, lightning fast, and experts at squeezing through the tiniest gaps, but today I am on my guard. I calculate that I have already lost at least 5 stops. Would I still have time to properly unleash my associations onto the fleeting streetscape or the profiling of my fellow passengers before we turned back? For some reason, the opposite direction does not suit my neurotically sensitive machinery. Yet I manage to get started. I begin by trying to analyze seemingly trivial details in people's expressions and demeanors inside the carriage. I watch the nervous insecurity of the passengers and their way of looking blankly past one another to conceal their thoughts, and in doing so, they reveal them better than if they had spoken them aloud. Just as a whale's baleen filters tiny plankton from the seawater for sustenance, my brain filters the slightest shifts in expression, searching for the stories dwelling behind them to feed its own peculiar hunger to escape the tediousness of the everyday. Do others, too, ponder, like I do in this ride, that strips souls naked, where concealment exposes the smallest lies? Do they pick someone from their surroundings and maliciously begin weaving mental traits onto their fellow passengers based on their layers of clothing and appearance, examining the matter from every angle, certain in their conclusions? Do they chuckle quietly at some comical twist or mutter to themselves? Then, waking up in shame, do they glance around fearfully to see if anyone noticed? Well, I have, shamelessly and precisely tracking every movement of the mind and the injustice it weaves toward its subject. By staring in a particular way, I let the brazen and arrogant know that I have noticed what they are thinking, making them turn their heads in shame as their expression shatters into a frantic panic to find refuge in their own window. I myself am ashamed of my vague idleness, and I suspect my aimlessness shows in my demeanor. But I do not panic, because my analytical mind simply turns inward to examine my own reactions, and I always vanish into a standby thought about my worthless self, seen through the eyes of one of my alter egos. The tram is also a physically unsafe place, governed by a general democracy where everyone holds the same rights. The thought makes me smile as I notice a tense, dark-suited official jerking uncomfortably while hanging from a ceiling strap. Meanwhile, a young man who looks unemployed, sporting a vibrant pink mohawk, sits comfortably on a double seat with his legs stretched across, letting no one sit beside him. The light, perfumed brush of a beautiful woman who just stepped inside makes me feel like an ugly boar. A pale, sweated neurosis presses upon my mind, and I try to think solely of the flashing scenery or the attire of the boarding passengers, when agitated neuroticism is sometimes like a butterfly flitting aimlessly here and there without a pause, settling only for a moment before continuing its journey without a conscious destination. Gradually, I calm down and begin my usual tram watching. Secretly, I stare at the faces of my fellow passengers one by one, trying to guess from their shifting expressions the personalities and meaningful thoughts of absolute strangers. Some people are open by nature. Their thoughts sit on the surface, making their faces react to situations like the skin of a chameleon. Most of all, however, I like the artistic types who stare mysteriously into their own thoughts, their eyes like mottled, slowly color-shifting oil slicks. The gaze of a beautiful, dreamy-looking girl transports me to a field blooming with poppies, where infatuated thoughts find the blind spot of their daydream. The illusion shatters when a drunk, coarse-skinned man slumps down beside me, reeking of piss and cheap liquor. He glances at my way and begins to bellow some age-old, repetitive tune. He stops for a moment, then begins to boast loudly of his past exploits in the Winter War. I believe every word, of course, but I have no sympathy for his backward-running coming-of-age story. I try to concentrate on a well-preserved woman further away, imagining what it would be like to sleep with her, searching for the expression on her face as I thrust inside her. Perhaps she would close her eyes and part her lips slightly, her breathing growing heavier. The passion would make her gasp for air like a fish. That face can endure anything. The woman notices my stare, looks at me searchingly for a moment, offers a faint smile, and turns away. Now, I admire her confidence too. There is always a good reason for that kind of assurance. The drunk gives me a painful jab in the ribs with his elbow, and I feel an urge to slam my fist into his bloated face, which resembles dough covered in pigskin. He mutters loudly. He has supposedly taken a grenade fragment to his leg for the 1,000th time and wants to show the scar. An old woman across the aisle looks toward us with loathing and says in a loud voice, "What absolute scum!" Everyone looks at us, and I blush, or assume I am blushing, and awkwardly try to look out the window as if I were somewhere else. And so I am. I am quick to shift time and place in my mind. The reeking reality beside me refuses to yield as I try to find new tracks for my thoughts. The drunk shouts loudly, "Fuck off, you stupid hag!" The carriage jerks to a halt, and everyone grabs onto something. The driver lunges from his seat and roars, "Out, old man, now!" A tough-looking guy, his head partially shaved, wants to help. He hauls the old man up by his tangled hair, shoves him to the door, and kicks him out. The man's face hits the stone pavement, and blood spurts from beneath the tearing skin. He lies there motionless, resembling a pile of dirty gray rags, more than a human being. Somewhere, a cultured male voice says, "The man is dead. Is no one going to help?" The leatherhead rushes out, shouting as he goes, "Fuck, I'm not going to prison over that piece of shit." Police sirens are already wailing close by. All movement has stopped, except for the leatherhead's fleeing back and his bobbing red mohawk. With screeching brakes, the police car halts at an angle, barely avoiding running over the drunk. The grandmother who spoke earlier wakes up again to grumble, "Serves him right, the absolute scum." A policeman lifts the corpse's head and says laconically, "Looks like Kale's journey ended here then." He then looks sternly around and asks the driver, "Did he fall while the tram was moving, since he landed right at the edge of the roadway?" The driver explains the sequence of events in detail, causing the policeman to mutter something about negligent homicide. He then looks at the blankly staring passengers, calculating his workload, and continues slowly. "Could have been an accident too. Tripped over his own feet after taking a hit, he probably would have gone face first anyway." Some of the passengers step outside and walk away without being stopped. The second officer asks for instructions over the radio, and after getting the driver's name and address, allows the journey to continue. I think of death and the pile of rags. There didn't seem to be time for a final accounting. Now that the man is no longer a nuisance to anyone, it is easier to think of him as a human being who has fulfilled his duty, born, lived, and died. His woman had left him when the jobs dried up. Stress took his potency, and he screamed in his nightmares at night. Perhaps the suffering and horrors of the war still swirled in his mind and had turned him into a drunk. I can almost see a string of abandoned adult children mourning by the coffin, if they are to be found anywhere. Though perhaps his son, currently serving time in prison, has at least been brought to the scene under guard. Poor father, poor son. The terminus. I jump out, not wanting to make it obvious to the driver that I am riding just for the sake of it. I walk toward the detached houses, pretending to be in a hurry. The woman, who was previously the object of my imagination, is walking ahead of me and remembers my staring. She glances back fearfully, and when I am within speaking distance, she nervously begins searching for something to say, testing to see if I am dangerous. I initially intend to slow down and let the woman go her way, but she wants to make sure and stops completely. She says, "You saw what happened. A man was killed just like that, and nobody did anything. It was almost murder, and the police couldn't care less. They were probably glad to be rid of a regular customer." I agree. She continues her questioning. "Do you live here too?" She puts me in an awkward spot. There are only a few houses nearby, and lying would not work. Something in her gaze makes me candid. And embarrassed, I tell her the truth. The woman says she understands, and we chat for a moment longer at her front gate about the cynicism of the world and the indifference of people, searching for either a beginning or an end to our acquaintance. In the neighbor's kitchen window, the curtains twitch, and I know to forget any potential invitation for coffee. We stand there for a moment, embarrassed. After ensuring that the tram from earlier has vanished on its return journey, I return to the stop, my mind lightened.